I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. We're going to talk meditation now with Dee Willock. She's a local instructor on meditation and the author of a new book, Falling into Easy, Help for Those Who Can't Meditate. Meditation is something we hear a lot about, especially the benefits derived from it. There is a bit of a stigma. Perhaps it's seen as a waste of time, new age, or even mystical. But there's a way it can work, and Ms. Willock in this book tells us what they are and how. We'll ask her what those are, how meditation has affected her life, and what are some of the tips she's got as to how to go about clearing one's mind, relaxing, and meditating for a better you. The book is accessible and practical. Dee Willock's website is fallingintoeasy.com, and the book is published by O-Book. She's taught meditation and yoga for over 25 years. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Dee Willock. Ms. Willock, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Thanks for joining us. So who is this book for?
This is for people who say, I can't meditate. I've tried, I've followed some of the instructions, and it's just not working, and I'm going to give up.
Did you find in writing the book that there was a need for, I guess, a sort of change in how people perceive meditation?
Absolutely. You know, meditation is becoming more mainstream, and it's not such a scary word, but there's still a lot of association sort of with the Eastern mystical, something that comes out of India. But, you know, right now there's so many research studies by people in the United States. I was just reading some studies on the effectiveness of meditation, and people are more open to it, and certainly there's a lot of stress in our culture and our society, and people are looking for a solution and a way to handle stress. So I think it's the right time.
There's also a lot of stress in thinking about how one can change one's life. I mean, just thinking about the different ways that one can go about, say just even starting meditation. If you're a busy person,
mm-hmm.
you've got a job and other things in your life going on, you might think, well, I don't know if I have time for that.
Yeah, that's very common, people saying they don't have the time. So I have an image for those people, and that is, imagine sort of you're on your way to work, you're not quite out the door yet, and you've got a lot of things you're thinking about, and suddenly you just sort of walk out, let's say on your front deck or your back porch, and the sun comes out, and in Vancouver that's great, and it just feels hot and just wonderful, and you think, and you look at your watch and you think, you know, I've got 10 minutes, I could leave in 10 minutes, I don't have to leave right now, I'm going to sit here with my cup of coffee or my tea or whatever my favorite drink is. I'm going to sit here on this deck, and I'm going to give myself 10 minutes. I'm just going to feel the sun. And you sit down, and as soon as you sit down with your drink and you feel that sun, the sense that you have is relief and unhinging. And I use the word sort of unhinging. It's like, okay, I can let go of those thoughts about what I have to do today. And then they slowly fade into the background because I'm thinking about the sun, and I'm thinking about the comfort of sipping on this drink. And that actually is meditation. When you shift 2 degrees out of this busy mind state and you go into a place of relief and sort of you're in that sweet pocket that is just a sense of ease, that's where you start. And that's meditation. And people will always find the time to sit in the sun and drink a cup of coffee.
So 10 minutes is enough?
10 to 15. 15 is kind of ideal because something shifts sort of after that 10-minute mark. And so what you're doing is you're not going in with the rules that you've heard about, which is sitting up straight in some cross-legged position
yeah.
and focusing on your breath, although I do a lot of breath work. But I think initially people go, I'm going to go into that place that I felt relief when I was sitting on my deck and I felt the sun. What did that relief feel like? And to sustain that feeling of relief, all you have to do is describe it. So to sustain it, you describe it. So you say, okay, well, what did that relief feel like? It felt like unhinging. It felt like sitting back deeply in the chair. It felt like warmth. It felt like ease. And so if you can keep describing that to yourself for a number of minutes, you're actually meditating because you're on a single focus and in a somatic sense of ease in your body. And you're building that sort of foundation of being able to differentiate yourself from your thoughts. So if it's fun like that and it feels like relief, people are going to want to do it.
Well, you know, you're you teach meditation, you teach yoga.
Mm-hmm.
What do you tell the business person, the busy person, who thrives on sort of this frenzy in their head? with you know, a million things going on at the same time, to make the time to meditate?
Well, it's a good point, because the thriving is almost like an addiction, and I've been there too. I get really moving quickly, mm-hmm. and I sort of get charged up by all the things I want to do, and I just don't have the time. But then I realize, sort of by the end of the day, when I'm sort of sitting still or lying down, I realize my body isn't feeling that good. And I've had high blood pressure, and I've brought it down with meditation. And it's that sort of thing where you feel overcharged, and you start to notice that, and you go, well, wait a minute. I could take 10 minutes here even before I fall asleep and recapture that feeling of relief and ease and unhinging. And it ends up being worth it sort of from a health point of view, because people know the harm of having too much stress.
What about the idea that one needs sort of their busy mind for their job? And I know in meditation, you're clearing one's mind. Does that make you less effective, say?
I know, and that's a really common question. And the reality is, when you build a foundation through this kind of meditation, whatever is easy for you, you come to a place of alignment and clarity, and you actually have a clearer mind, more focused, and you're able to make those decisions in business, and you're able to stay more equanimous and sort of neutral and not so reactive. And it actually is a beneficial tool that you take into the business world. It isn't, you're not getting rid of your busy mind, you're making it more functional.
Is meditation for everyone?
Absolutely. And you know what? Everyone meditates every day, because when they sit down in that chair in the sun and have their coffee and they let their thoughts go for a few minutes, that's a type of meditation. Or when they're running and they, you know, you talk about runners being in the zone, and all of a sudden you just, your breath and the feeling of your feet as you touch the ground, that's a sort of a single focus and you're in that zone. People meditate all the time. And the more they build the stronger foundation of meditation, the more beneficial their lives will be, and they'll notice that they're just less stressed. So yeah, absolutely for everybody.
But there is a sort of stigma that it is something that women do more than men. Is that correct?
I do have more women in the class, that's true, and I'm not sure why that is. Maybe women are more seekers and more open to the idea of trying something new, but certainly it's changing. I think more men have responded to me about the book than I've noticed from before. And because I think I use terms that are sort of scientific, like I talk about fluid mechanics and displacement and molecular science and talk about the density of molecules and thoughts. And so people go, okay, well, that's not so Eastern and mystical. That kind of makes sense. And I also talk about, of course, the research studies that are going on in all these universities. Men aren't afraid of that. That sounds reasonable to them.
Yeah. Is it a solitary experience? I mean, I guess it has to be, or does it?
Well, people do get together and meditate in classes and groups, and certainly when everyone's meditating as a group, I think there's benefit to that. But I mostly do, most of the time I'm meditating by myself. I find it just easier because I can do it anywhere and I can be at home, and there's lots of flexibility with time because I'm not trying to organize a group. So either way it works, though.
Now, when one is meditating and say they fall asleep, is that a good thing?
Well, that's a really good question, because it happens all the time. And so there, you know, me, I'm a recovering insomniac, so falling asleep is not a problem. If I fall asleep during a meditation, I think that's great, and then I wake up and then I go back to meditating. But there are some people where sleep is not an issue, and they can sleep really easily and maybe sleep too much, and they may use sleep as an escape. I know some people that can sleep 14 hours if they're upset about something. They just sort of zone out. There's nothing wrong with sleep. Certainly it's good for the body, but if your intention is to sort of experiment with this meditation thing, and you know that you're a person that falls asleep, there is one thing that you can do, which is to be sitting up somewhere comfortably rather than lying down, because you're more likely to fall asleep.
Yeah.
And then when you're sitting up, just have your eyes slightly open so they're cast down. So you might just be seeing your thighs or the chair that you're sitting in. You're not seeing that much. But just the fact that they're slightly open will prevent you from falling asleep, and then you get to experience some of the benefits that can happen when you try this meditation thing.
You used the word recovering insomniac. is that it has helped, has it, the meditation?
Absolutely. Yeah. I used to have problems with sleep, and I just it's not an issue anymore. Because I spend more of my time in a relaxed state, and I'm less stressed, and I know that my busy mind would keep me awake, and now I can make that slight 2-degree shift away from the craziness of my busy mind, and I go into that place of just calm where the thoughts are not running me. And when they're not running me, I can fall asleep more easily. So it's definitely... And lowering blood pressure. I used to have high blood pressure.
Yeah.
And the doctor said, you're going to have to go on blood pressure pills for the rest of your life. And I said, yeah, I don't think so. That doesn't sound like me. And so I said to the doctor, I think I'll just go home and really work on the meditation and the yoga and bring my blood pressure down. This was years ago.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, I don't think that's going to work. And it did, and I brought it down to normal levels, and he was pretty happy with that. And I did not go on any medication.
Back to the insomnia thing for just a sec, because this has always interested me. I mean, I get it from time to time, and so that's why, you know, it might seem like a silly question, but it's not the last one I'll ask today. can one replace sleep with meditation?
Well, I don't think you'd ever want to replace sleep, although people do talk about the fact that we may not need as much sleep as we think we need. I'm not that sure about that because I love sleep, and if I can get 6-7 hours, I just feel a lot better. But I think it helps you have a deeper sleep, and maybe you would need less because you're going into a deeper state. I certainly feel that's happened for me.
In terms of, I asked you already about whether 10 minutes was enough. Is there a right time of day to do this?
No. That's the thing that I talk about in the book is no rules, no structure, is to find something that suits you, because if I'm going to say you have to do this at 7 in the morning, people aren't going to want that, because that sounds like discipline, and it sounds like another should that they have to add into their life. So all I suggest is you find a time that works for you, and then just sort of make a commitment for a couple weeks to show up at that time. I mean, it's not the end of the world if you don't. But something about just showing up and sitting there and seeing what happens when you go for this sense of relief, that consistency actually builds a really nice foundation that assists you in a meditation practice. A little bit of consistency is okay.
Yeah. For you, when did you discover meditation?
It was about 28 years ago, and I was dealing with a really sensitive nervous system, and I was quite reactive to things, and I just felt stressed really easily. I guess I'm sort of thin-skinned, or I was. And I just sort of dove in. At that time, I dove into yoga and meditation, and the combination really within a month of really going to a lot of classes and working with a teacher that I liked, within a month, my nervous system felt like somebody else's nervous system. It's like, whoa, I'm so solid and happier and just even and less reactive.
And 28 years ago, there weren't as many people doing it as there are now, right?
No, it was not that common. So, you know, fortunately I lived in Kitsilano, so
yeah,
28 years ago there were a few people doing it in Kitsilano. I mean, now it's for sure yoga is everywhere and meditation is growing. But, yeah, back then it was less common, but I instinctively knew that I needed to handle being run by these thoughts.
You mentioned that it lowered your blood pressure.
Right.
It helped with your insomnia. What happens with our brains when one meditates often? I mean, does something happen physically? Do the synapses fire differently? Do the neurons get activated or anything like that?
That's such a great question, because I just really have developed this keen interest in what's going on in the brain, and I've started looking at research studies, and I want to study the anatomy of the brain. So I'm not a specialist, but I was just reading this morning about a study that was done. I think it was... University of North Carolina, and they talk about how the brain waves move, they shift. So the brain waves that are in the stress-prone right frontal cortex actually shift and move into the calmer left frontal cortex. And I'm reading that going, that's amazing. I'm not entirely sure what that means. I'm going to look up the frontal cortex and see where that is.
Yeah.
And they talk about other studies were done where they showed that long-time meditators had... lower heart rate and lower respiratory and metabolic rates, which would then lower blood pressure. So, I don't know the science behind it exactly, but it's true for me. And it's fascinating to me to read these because I'm going, oh, that's happening in my brain. Yeah. Something's happening to my left frontal cortex. I think that's amazing.
You said you started this 28 years ago for yourself. When did you figure out or feel that something was changing with you? I mean, how long does that take?
Within a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
It was right because I suddenly, in a couple of minutes, when you do this one exercise where you make your out-breath, your exhalation, longer than your in-breath. So let's say you just inhale to four, a count of four, but you exhale to a count of eight. Something like that where you're just increasing how long your exhalation is. Within a couple of minutes, you notice that your body just feels calmer and your heart, your pulse slows down. I mean, in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you can feel results right away.
And I guess your day job is teaching meditation and yoga, right?
No, I'm actually a technical writer.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, so that sort of got me into the writing thing.
Yeah.
I do sort of health administration and technical writing, and so I had all these ideas coming to me when I was meditating, images and metaphors, which I use in the book and describe, and I thought, I better get these written down because they're unusual and really helpful, and I'd like to share them, so I just started writing them.
So when you teach meditation, what are sort of the people that come to you, and I guess what are sort of the problems that they say that they think that meditation can fix?
Yeah, that's a good question because the class has such a wide range. There are seasoned meditators in the class who mm-hmm. just want to enhance their practice. There are people sort of tried it off and on, and really want to stick to something. And there's people who have never tried it. And they come for a variety of reasons, but most of the time it's stress. They feel like there's too much going on in their life, and they feel like they can't sort of get a handle on it, and they want to feel more calm, and they want to feel happier. And they've heard that meditation can help with that. And as you know, the beginning of my book, there's that story of the mechanic at the gas station. And he literally turned to me and said, I'm in pain, and I've heard that meditation helps with pain, and what do you think? Amazing.
Yeah, that's an interesting story there. Let's talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
You had a dream.
Yes.
That your car was out of oil.
Oil.
Out of oil. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And you also think that you could teach meditation. Is that right?
Well, there were the swirling ideas that came out of the dream. I sort of woke up and was like, "Oh, your car's out of oil." I said, "My car's out of oil," and you should, and then think about these meditation technique. So two completely different ideas were swirling in my head. And I thought, well, I wonder if my car is out of oil. And I drove to the gas station and got the attendant to help me lift the hood because I had a problem with my wrist and couldn't lift it at the time. And we were under the hood looking for the dipstick. And he turned to me and he said, I've had three heart surgeries and I'm in a lot of pain. And I've heard that meditation can help with pain. And I don't know how to do that. What do you think?
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, better get this into a book.
What about the stigma that it is seen as mystical and perhaps too new age for some people? I mean, do you do some work in terms of combating that?
I do, and I think meditation is becoming a little more acceptable. Certainly the word's been bantered around enough. But one way I sort of tackle that is I try not to use the New Age words. Not that there's anything wrong with them, but language, you know, connotation of words can affect people. And so I try not to use things like flow and bliss and joy. Those are all great things, but it really turns people off. And so that's why I use examples of science, because people go, okay, displacement, how does that work? I'm a fluid being, and I can move things around and differentiate myself from thoughts. Well, okay, that sounds interesting, and different and not new agey. Maybe I can try that. So it's just a game you play with words, really.
Yeah. I've really enjoyed the book and our chat today. Continued good luck with the book.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
You're very welcome. The website for more, fallingintoeasy.com, all one word. The book is called Falling Into Easy, Help for Those Who Can't Meditate. It's published by O Books. Its author, Dee Willock, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Ponto.